Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded June 11th, 2025. Well, Donald Trump promised hell for illegals if reelected, and now he's delivering, in Los Angeles at least. Another plank in the Trump platform was to bully and bludgeon neighboring countries into adopting U.S. border measures, measures more familiar perhaps to the despotic regimes of distant history, now made new again, if not so great in America. And so it is, the Canadian government is following the Trump lead, though newly minted PM Mark Carney denies his bill, C-2, or Strong Borders Act, is doing that. But he says Bill C-2 will strengthen our laws and keep Canadians safe. Critics, however, charge C-2 is a front door to tyranny, restricting asylum claims, targeting immigration status in selected cases, and promising to make life in Canada anything but safe for migrants of every stripe. Prasanna Shamaguthas is a senior editor for Jurist News, the third-year University of Windsor Faculty of Law student, too, holds an advanced poli-sci degree, and is creator of the acclaimed documentary film series Truth to the Powerless, an investigation into Canada's foreign policy. His latest article at Jurist News is Canadian Minister Anda Sagri's Borders Bill Constitutes a Vicious Assault on Immigrant Rights. Prasanna Shamaguthas in the first half. And is it safe to talk about COVID yet? As much as we might like to forget all about what happened just a few short years ago, is it all right now to remember the fear, upheaval, pitting of friends, co-workers, family, and loved ones against one another in a fight over an invisible threat or non-threat to civilization itself? 5 years later, can we finally talk about COVID-19? Debbie Lerman is a retired medical writer and fellow at the Brownstone Institute, whose focus has been the societal and global trends instigating and contributing to the COVID catastrophe. Her research and many articles written for Brownstone has culminated in her newly released book, The Deep State Goes Viral, Pandemic Planning and the COVID Coup. Debbie Lerman and COVID Crisis as Prologue in the second half. But first, Prasanna Shamaguthas and Carney's Strong Borders Bill C-2, Unmaking Canada to Save It. Welcome back to the show, Prasanna.
Thank you for having me, Chris. It's great to be here.
It's my great pleasure, of course. Now, your article notes how Bill C-2 reflects the Trump camp border philosophy. How much, Prasanna, of the 120-plus page act was actually drawn up by this nascent Carney government?
Well, it certainly reflects the Carney government's appeasement towards the Trump agenda. Even the public safety minister, Anda Sagri, who introduced the bill, he explicitly said that this bill addresses, I quote, irritants for the U.S. And, you know, that's a significant acknowledgement that we're willing to sacrifice human rights for Trump's anti-immigrant agenda.
I only ask because the government's only been in power for 5 weeks, and a 127-page bill produced and released and tabled in 5 weeks is nothing short of a miracle in my experience of the way government runs. So I wonder if this wasn't something that was either written for them, and if so, by whom, or that it was a part of a long-running plan by the Trudeau government before Carney got in.
Well, a number of the ministers in Carney's cabinet are individuals that were in Trudeau's government. They've just been reshuffled in different places. The minister who introduced the bill, Minister Anda Sagri, he was the Indigenous Affairs Minister prior to that, and then he was also during prior to the election, he was the Attorney General as well. And a lot of these individuals within Carney's cabinet are just, you know, carryovers from the Trudeau government. So certainly it's very likely that this was something that was already in the works during the Trudeau government, carried over under Carney, and just introduced, you know, recently.
Well, and you take aim at Gary Anasungri's directly. Canadian Minister Anasungri's border bill constitutes a vicious assault on immigrant rights is the name of the article, of course. So why are you laying so much at the feet of the public safety minister? Clearly, he didn't write this himself.
Well, it's because of his values, the values that he initially had as a self-described human rights lawyer, as a individual who really rose to national prominence advocating for the rights of refugees, specifically the rights of Sri Lankan Tamil refugees. You know, he had written an op-ed in 2016 talking about how 30 years prior, the Canadian government, they accepted 155 Sri Lankan Tamil refugees who had come onto the shores of Newfoundland. And this was an enormous positive thing for Canada. Many of these Canadians went on to form businesses. They went on to help grow the Canadian economy. They made the society richer. So Anasungri took a very pro-refugee approach. And he even explicitly said that as Canadians, I'm quoting, as Canadians, we should commit to never repeating our history of turning away those who come to our shores seeking refuge. So for him to have this belief, and even for Sri Lankan Tamil refugees after the end of the Civil War in 2009, there were Tamil refugees who came on boats, Ocean Lady and Sun Sea, those were the boats' names. And this was during the Harper government. And they were put in immigration detention jails. And Anasungri was very public in advocating for their release and speaking out against the discriminatory treatment of the Tamil refugees, where the Harper government was, without evidence, casting them as terrorists, suspected terrorists. And Anasungri was very vocal in saying this should not be done. And so now, you know, with that refugee history as a human rights lawyer, refugee advocate, with that history, he then introduces this bill, which significantly is an assault on the rights of refugees and immigrants. A huge hypocritical about face on the part of Anasungri for political power, for prestige. So that's why it's so important to call out that hypocrisy and that behavior and to put pressure on him in his position of authority to change course.
I'm sure you're not the only one that has mentioned the hypocrisy, the public safety minister. Did you get a chance to put a question to him or his office? I don't see any direct quote in your piece.
Not for this article, no, but I had a friendship initially with Anasungri, and I would be telling him when he was a backbench member of parliament, I would be requesting that this was during the time that Saudi Arabia was waging its offensive in Yemen. And I would be telling him, you know, you should speak up about this. You know, you're a human rights lawyer. Like, you know what's going on is wrong. The liberal government, your government is providing weapons to Saudi Arabia, arms to Saudi Arabia. You should speak up and do something about this. And he just kind of dismissed me. You know, I was like, yeah, sure. I'll say something. And then, just in a very, you know, a patronizing way. And so that interaction alone made it very clear to me that he was somebody who is solely concerned about advancing himself within the Liberal Party. And he knows that if he is vocal about Canada's failure to adhere to its proclaimed human rights standards, then he will be penalized by not being included in the cabinet. And he doesn't want that. And I wrote an article prior to this when Anasungri was attorney general, because a number of Palestinian Canadian groups were suing the Canadian government for its failure to adhere to its obligations under the Genocide Convention to prevent genocide in Gaza, and for Canada's active role in facilitating Israel's genocide in Gaza. So they were suing the Canadian government. So in effect, they were suing the attorney general. And I had written an article at this time on the Sangha was attorney general. And he had this whole history of speaking out about Sri Lankan Tamils and saying how there was a genocide going on in Sri Lanka by the Sri Lankan government against Tamils. Whereas he was so vocal in that instance, but in the case of the Palestinians, he was totally silent. He refused to condemn Israel's assault on Gaza, even when liberal members of parliament had expressed condemnation. And even when Carney, presently, he expressed condemnation, Anand Dasungri still refuses to express condemnation because he is solely concerned about maintaining political power, his position in cabinet. So I have a very long track record of following closely his political actions and how it contradicts his political philosophy prior to entering political office and prior to becoming a cabinet member.
Well, in your article, you cite the Migrant Rights Network. They say on their page, migrantrights.ca, that in an article, Migrant Rights Network condemns Bill C-2's anti-refugee and mass deportation provisions. They say that the bill undermines, quote, Canada's refugee and immigration system in violation of international obligations and basic human rights. What are those violations?
One of the things that Bill C-2 will do if it's passed into law is right now we have something called the Safe Third Country Agreement, which is where whichever country is the first country of entry, either Canada or the United States, if they come into the United States first and they claim, you know, asylum, they cannot then go to Canada because they already came into the United States. That would be their safe country. So what this bill does is it further strengthens and it further expands the Safe Third Country Agreement to cut down on the exceptions whereby individuals who would come into the United States first could get into Canada and could claim asylum. So what we currently have now, one of the exceptions is if you come into Canada from the U.S. through an irregular irregular entry, not through a port of entry, and if you're in Canada after 14 days, you can claim asylum. So, but what Bill C-2 does, it cuts that out completely. So it takes away the 14-day grace period. And under the Refugee Convention, it is illegal to penalize anybody who for coming in to a country seeking refuge through through irregular means if they have genuine claims of persecution. And so this there are many instances, but in this specific instance, that is one example of a flagrant violation by taking away the 14-day grace period. That's one of the exceptions to the Safe Third Country Agreement, which currently prohibits individuals from being returned to the United States. And I remember when I was doing research for my documentary on Canadian foreign policy, Truth to the Powerless, I was looking into the Safe Third Country Agreement. We interviewed Canada's ambassador to the United States during the time the Safe Third Country Agreement was coming into effect. And I was curious about, you know, why we even have the Safe Third Country Agreement. And one of the reasons that I discovered is that the Safe Third Country Agreement was kind of the United States' way of thanking us for our contribution to the war on terror. So the Safe Third Country Agreement came after it was implemented into law after 9/11. And as a result of Canada's willingness to participate in the war on terror, the United States thanked us with the Safe Third Country Agreement because the Safe Third Country Agreement overwhelmingly benefits Canada, right? Because it prevents any refugees that are coming from the United States into Canada, they get turned back. So it overwhelmingly benefits Canada by preventing refugees from coming into our country. And it puts the greater burden on the United States. And the United States, of course, treats them inhumanely. So one of the reasons that I discovered for why we had to save the third country agreement was a thank you on the part of the United States for our support, our military support, our diplomatic support for the war on terror.
Some thanks. When you mentioned in your article, and you touched on briefly off the top, about the change of policy in Canada and how the minister responsible cited the great boon to the country, allowing the Tamil refugees in way back when. I mean, so what favor is America doing us now then, if that's the case? You cite the Deloitte study that says that billions of dollars in economic activity in this country, positive activity, it goes along with allowing refugees into the country. So what favors is America doing us by saying that, oh no, we'll keep them on this side of the line?
Yeah, and I mean, what is in effect happening, you know, and what will further escalate is Canada's complicity in the United States' anti-immigrant agenda, which is in flagrant violation of both its domestic laws and international law. And we're increasingly complicit in that. And this bill would just further increase our complicity and even our own violations to domestic and international law as well.
Yeah. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Prasanna Shamagouthas. He is senior editor for Jurist News. He's a third-year University Windsor Faculty of Law student. He holds an advanced poli-sci degree. Is that right? Is it, Prasanna, a solid poli-sci degree that you hold?
I have an undergraduate in political science and criminology at the University of Toronto, and I have a master's degree in global affairs at the University of Toronto's Monk School. So yes, that's correct to say advanced.
And on the power of that education, you went on to make, as you mentioned earlier, The Truth to the Powerless, an investigation into Canada's foreign policy film series that you and I spoke about when we first spoke, I don't know, a couple of years ago now, at least. So now, we're talking about his in and around Prasanna's article, Canadian Minister Anit Sundry's border bill constitutes a vicious assault on immigrant rights. This is, of course, about BC2. You say that this is a brutal attack on refugees and asylum seekers in this country. Should it pass, we should make clear that it's passed first reading. It's been rushed into second reading. Do you think that this will get second reading before the House sits for the summer? Is that the plan? Do you know?
I think that this bill will certainly pass. I think they have the votes, even though we're a liberal minority government. Mm-hmm. I don't think there will be any significant obstacles. I think you'd even get some conservative support too, because as Minister Anit Sundry even said in promoting this bill, he said that we have a mandate. The Canadian government has given us a mandate. That was a direct quote. And basically, you know, there are two rationales for this bill. One is, as Minister Anit Sundry said, it addresses, I quote, irritants for the U.S., which we discussed. Another reason is, as Minister Anit Sundry said, is that we're introducing this bill as a mandate because the Canadian government the Canadian public is fed up with so many international students here, with so many immigrants here, with so many people coming from brown countries here. The Canadian public is fed up with this. But the argument that I make in my article is that their frustration, while understandable, is misplaced. So right now, Toronto, for instance, it's suffering from a congestion crisis. Canada, nationally, and even Toronto, we're suffering from a housing crisis. And the immigrants, the international students, those on work permits, those on study permits, they're being scapegoated as a result of the Canadian government's failure to deal with the housing crisis by investing in public housing. What the Canadian government did prior to 1993, the Canadian government, they would invest 20,000 units of public social housing annually. And what Brian Mulroney in 1993 did in his budget, he scrapped that and he left it to the private sector to create a housing, what the private sector did is that they created these extremely costly rental housing, and they rental prices skyrocketed and wages didn't keep up. So this has made housing extremely expensive, and the Canadian government's failure to invest in infrastructure, to invest within the public sector in these areas where you can create far more jobs, the Canadian government's failure to do this is what's responsible for the congestion crisis, because it's resulting in so many people being in places like Toronto, because in places like Windsor, Ontario, or London, Ontario, or in places in Northern Ontario, where there is very little investment in infrastructure and very little investment in housing by the government, there's no incentive for the people to go there because there's no jobs. So it resulted them in being concentrated in this area. And so it's easy for the Canadian public to scapegoat immigrants and say they're the problem, when actually in my article, I make the argument that we actually need immigrants. Canada has an aging labor force. Our construction industry, by 2032, there is a projected more than 200,000 job loss that needs to be taken care of by immigrants. We need immigrants within our medical sector, within the agriculture sector. We need more immigration. So it's not immigrants that's a problem. It's the Canadian government's failure as a result of their adherence to neoliberal ideology, their failure to invest in housing, infrastructure, the failure to invest in all the areas of the public sector that would be beneficial to the working class. That is what is responsible for the housing crisis and for the frustration that Canadians have. And Bill C-2, it seeks to scapegoat immigrants and say, okay, we're putting in these provisions that will give the Canadian government significant power to unilaterally cancel or alter permanent resident visas, student visas, work permits. The Canadian government would have the process to unilaterally do that without due process, without judicial oversight. That's what Bill C-2 does.
Well, and right now in this country, not just in Toronto, but here in Victoria and Vancouver, up and down the island on Vancouver Island, renters fear for their lives in the sense that the prices are so crazy, out of control, and so far beyond the reach of wages, as you mentioned, that getting evicted, or if your landlord decides to sell their property, which happens, you're in an existential crisis immediately, and that's something that's being felt across the country and across the Western world that follows these economic policies that you described.
And right now, I just want to also mention this quick point. Right now in Canada, about only 4% of homes are non-market housing, like public housing and non-profit housing, compared to other OECD countries where that's at 7%. In places in Europe, it's at 30%. In the UK, even, it's at 15%. So we're significantly lagging behind. And the Deloitte study, it showed that by 2030, if we increase our public housing to that 7% average, we could see a $67 billion economic boost for our country. So it's to our country's benefit to invest in public housing.
Yeah. Well, and this abrogation of the government's responsibility to the people rather than to the investing class goes even further. In your article, you mentioned, and we're fast running out of time, so I want to cover this, that this Bill C-2 is set up to go across the desk of the so-called governor in council, not before the House. Necessarily. Could you explain who and what the governor in council means and how that a threat, if it is so, to the democratic process here in this country?
The governor in council is basically the governor general acting on the advice of the federal cabinet. So it's basically like it's in effect the cabinet itself, it's the ministers and themselves. And so it doesn't go to the House. There's no due process, essentially. And what the governor and council, what the powers that they have is that they're, as I mentioned, they're able to unilaterally cancel or alter a wide range of immigration documents like permanent resident visas, work and study permits, temporary resident visas, or suspend them entirely without any sense of due process or judicial oversight. And they're able to do this in the public interest, even though it's very vague what the public interest stands for. And so it gives them a significant unilateral power. And some people fear that if this bill comes into law, maybe the Liberal government won't go to the extreme in terms of unilaterally canceling or altering, work study permits, temporary resident visas, PRs. Maybe the Liberal government won't do it, but maybe a conservative government will. They will then take these powers of Bill C-2, that's law, and they will legally be able to go on an extremely aggressive authoritarian direction. That's what a lot of people are fearing. That's what Migrant Rights Network is fearing.
And of course, the Governor General is actually the servant of the King of England, who sat in the House reading the throne speech just not so very long ago. King Charles III. I can wait for him to appear on the money. Well, we're out of time, Prasanna. But you finished your article with a call to resistance on Sunday. There was demos in Ottawa, at least. I think there was something in Montreal too. How do people find out more about this issue? There's your article at jurist.org, of course, but and get involved. And what's on the horizon for this as we watch south of the border as LA burns?
I think it's directly confronting a lot of our politicians, confronting Minister Anand Dasgupta, who knows better. He knows what he's doing is wrong. He knows he's written articles about the rights of refugees. He knows international law very well. He's a human rights lawyer. He knows very well what he's doing is wrong, but he does it anyway because he's concerned about political power. So confronting people like Minister Anand Dasgupta, confronting people like Mark Carney, going to your members of parliament's offices, directly petitioning them to not vote for this bill. Every parliamentarian who votes for this will be complicit in violating international and domestic law for immigrant rights, the refugee rights. And so I think that a lot of the work the Migrant Rights Network is doing, and I support that 100%, and they're doing a lot a far greater work than I am. I'm in my capacity, I'm speaking out as best as I can, but I think that's what all Canadians should be doing, because we cannot be in service to the U.S. and complicit in currying favor to Trump simply for economic concessions that will not even benefit Canadians but will benefit corporations. That's what Bill C-2 is going to do. That's why we're doing it.
Well, it'd be interesting to see if the Liberal Party that claimed it was the party of immigrants for a while there, how their party discipline holds up when this bill, so far it has, but we'll see. Again, the article is Canadian Minister Anand Dasgupta's border bill constitutes a vicious assault on immigrant rights. Prasanna Shamagouthas, I'm sorry about the pronunciation, Prasanna, but you can find it at jurist.org. Thanks a lot for coming on the show again, Prasanna?
Thanks for having me, Chris, and look forward to speaking to you again.
Well, it's my great pleasure. I want everyone else to stick around. I'm going to take a break, but Debbie Lerman's going to be back after the break, and we're going to talk about the untalkable about COVID. Yes, it's still an issue. Thanks again, Prasanna.
Thank you.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people whose bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.
Mostly they left home for mostly the same reason. Life was getting harder with every passing season. Some say it's corruption, others the embargo. How is one hungry family to know? But everybody said there was another option north. So people made their way to Mexico and then ventured forth, crossed the border and found work somewhere in the USA, hoping they might bring their families here someday. But now they're in detention, so far away from home, sending an SOS from Chrome. That has a history of prisoner abuse. Now all the sadists have been let loose. Give them a cup of moldy rice to live on every day, and see how many die when you treat them this way. With hardly any toilets, packed like sardines in a can, robbed of any dignity according to plan. To let the word get out, torture awaits if you dare to seek asylum in the United States. Now they're in detention, so far away from home.